last-minute cancellation from Devin Connolly. Could not make it with us to give his update on Cornell Cooperative Extension and all their good stuff. However, we have Will McCall in the studio live from the Wave Farm right now. And Will is going to talk about, well, I don't know what he's going to talk about. We're going to find out. But he's involved with the Climate Change Action Group of Cornell Cooperative Extension. Will McCall, welcome to the Monday Afternoon Show. Nice to meet you and nice to have you here with us. How are you?
I'm doing well, Karen. Thanks for having me on here. Good to meet you as well.
All right. And can you hear me okay?
I can.
All right. And maybe Tom needs to turn up your mic just a tiny bit, or maybe not. Hopefully everything's well. And tell me, what is your role with Cornell Cooperative Extension?
Yeah, so I'm new to the organization. I started working in mid-November, but I'm on the climate change and environment team. So I'm helping with any climate change-related work that we're doing. We work with a lot of municipalities to encourage local leadership within the municipalities to have policies that address climate change. So I've been working with that, and we work with communities in both Columbia and Greene County.
Okay, we spoke with an individual, I forget her name now, but she was involved with climate resilience and working particularly with the waterways and just being prepared for climate disruptions as far as our water, rivers, streams, and all that is concerned. And that's really important work, especially given this last crazy flood that we've had a couple weeks ago, in which Greene County, we actually had at least one death and lots of trouble and evacuation and whatnot. So definitely important work that you're doing there. Do you have a specific focus that you're in, or are you pretty much the whole deal?
Yeah, I kind of have my feet in a couple different ponds, kind of, so to say. But yeah, so definitely have been doing work with some of the flood resiliency as well. We do a lot of culvert right sizing, where we look at any road stream crossing and evaluate, you know, is this actually going to be accommodating much larger flows of water? Because a lot of times, you know, culverts are often built exclusively with thinking about how can we get a road across this waterway, and actually, you know, culvert right sizing is thinking about, well, can water enough, can it host the capacity of water flowing through during a very high flow time? And as you saw, like all over Catskill, Hudson Valley area, we've had pretty intense flooding in the past couple weeks. And on top of that, we also look at how aquatic organisms are affected by the culverts. Can they pass through? A lot of times there's like dams or little like small man-made waterfalls that can affect, you know, different organisms that are passing up that often within the Hudson River estuary. A lot of species require, you know, will swim up the river and swim up into tributaries during certain times of the year. So we look at what's the aquatic organism passability of these culverts as well.
That's a huge deal. They passed new laws over here in Massachusetts. I'm just over the border. They have, I know, these new culvert laws in which it's not just the organisms, but actual, I think, even like mink and ermine and just mammals. You know, I don't know about beavers, but certain animals have to be able to pass through the culvert. So when they repaved a road in the nearby town of Stanisfield, for example, it was something like $3 million for every like 5-mile stretch, because they had to redo all the culverts on every driveway and every road. And that was a big deal. But it's a new law, basically try to protect biodiversity. Do you have laws in New York like that as well? And is it more than just the organisms that you're talking about?
As far as the laws, I'm not totally positive. You know, like you're saying, this is such a important realm of like environmental, you know, preservation that people don't necessarily consider that often. And I'm new to this field and was not super aware of this and like thinking about, wow, that is so important. How often, you know, a road crosses a stream and ways that you need to protect both, you know, the aquatic life, and then also look at how much water is this actually going to allow pass? And during a high flow situation, is it going to be flooding onto the road? And, you know, investing in preventing, you know, more frequent flooding in a roadway is very necessary, and it can, you know, save communities, save lives of people in a community. It can save the community a lot of money down in the long run from having not having to deal with, you know, repeatedly dealing with these floods.
So, Will, we're definitely experiencing way more flooding than in the past. And do you predict, you probably predict that that's going to continue to happen?
Unfortunately, yeah, that is, that's the prognosis. Yeah. Continued higher amounts of, you know, just with climate change, it's like we've been seeing pretty cold weather the past couple of weeks, but you know, it's, we're about to get some warm weather, and that's kind of the rule with climate change, is just more erratic weather. So we might have a heavy snowfall and then there's a rain, and when it rains on snow, all the snow melts as well. And that can have a huge, you know, effect on our streams and in turn on our roadways and flooding, especially in an area like the Hudson Valley or the Catskills, where you've got mountains on one side and then all the water's flowing down. You know, water just follows gravity. And
yeah, I mean, Irene wrecked Greene County. I mean, that hurricane was just, it was unpredictable. People did not see it coming necessarily, as far as the high concentration of valleys, like you said, of valleys and streams just diverting water into highly concentrated areas. It just wiped out roads, buildings, all sorts of stuff. This is very important work. I wanted to ask you also about just development. I know it's just, my mind got sparked recently, just a sort of a side note, where I was reading Sierra Club magazine and endangered species, the Endangered Species Act and stuff like that, protecting habitat and all that. And that climate change is definitely a real threat to habitat, to species and biodiversity. But the number one threat is actually still habitat loss, which means our development, our building of new buildings, houses, sprawl, expansion of cities, commercial development, mining, forestry, all this stuff, building new roads. It actually has negative impacts on the environment more than the climate change at this moment. So, like, I think that's sort of the elephant in the room, is that people want to focus on climate change, but the real culprit right now is our inability to curb sprawl and development and the encroaching human activity that creates habitat loss and thus lessens biodiversity. So do you guys work at all with curbing of development and protection and all that? That was a long-winded statement and question, Will. I'm sorry about that, but you know where I'm getting at here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the thing is that they kind of all are related too, you know, and like development is exacerbating climate change. And by cutting down trees, that's, you know, those are carbon sinks that we're going to be helping cool our environment. It creates open patches with more sun shining in and, you know, biodiversity loss. It can also, you know, when you cut down a forested area, oftentimes the first plants that will start to colonize there are non-native plants as well, which is another whole part of the pie here with climate change and development and all of that. But yeah, I mean, there's, we work with communities to help, you know, developing like climate related laws and, you know, part of that is zoning as well, but we help communities, the local communities, you know, develop laws and, you know, essentially we're just like encouraging these communities and providing them with resources to, you know, develop with like a climate smart conscience.
Well, it sounds like good work. Do you guys have any events or what's in your department there with the climate, change, or do you do any educational events? I know Devin usually is talking about all the different educational events and activities that are happening throughout the month or two. In your department, do you have activities and events that are upcoming?
Yeah, so I have a list of all the events we're doing, but specifically within our department, my coworker Shane Stevens is helping run the Master Forest Owner Program on February 24th. It's a Saturday from 10 to 1 p.m. And essentially, you can become a Master Forest Owner volunteer, which serves a really important role in our community and connects landowners with free resources, knowledge, and the encouragement it takes to make, you know, important decisions regarding their forested land and how to enjoy their woodlands. And yeah, it kind of wraps in with what you're saying. It encourages people to value the forest that they have on their land and realize that that's a commodity and an important thing that should be, you know, sustained and conserved.
Nice. So Shane, regional coordinator for the Master Forest Owner Program. So he works obviously with you. Yeah. So trees are kind of one of the biggest like carbon and climate change combatants against climate change. I think they might be in our general culture a little underappreciated as the magnitude of how much they do for climate change. Am I off here?
No, you're not off at all. Yeah, they're absolutely essential. They're, you know, they're carbon sinks, so they have so much carbon, and you know they do so much to cool the environment, and you know, providing shade and then helping promote biodiversity. You know, forests are you know, such an important thing in our ecosystem.
Yeah, and also holding of water. This is amazing statistic I read somewhere where you would think that trees would suck water up and like drink a lot of water and maybe take water out of the aquifer, but the opposite seems to be true. And correct me if I'm wrong, where the ecosystem involving larger trees especially will actually hold water in, like you said, through cooling and through a special relationship with the water table. Like, what's going on there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, they can oftentimes, like, you know, the eastern hemlock tree plays a role in like their roots. They have like shallow roots that can filter water, and they promote a lot of you know, they eastern hemlocks help promote like a clean water in an environment. But yeah, I mean, even if the tree's drinking the water, it's still, you know, it's just part of the water cycle. It's going to be, you know, put out into the air and comes right back into us. So yeah, trees are a very important thing in our community.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to get at here is don't chop down all the trees, people. It's not a good idea. Okay, so what else do you have going on the calendar?
All right, so we have the Indoor Garden, a basic houseplant care program, and that's on Tuesday, February 20th from 5 to 6 p.m. It's part of the Master Gardener Volunteers program. And after that, like I said, we have on Saturday the Master Forest Owners program on February 24th, 10 to 1 p.m. Then on Monday, February 26th, we have a Native Trees and Shrubs program with presenter Tim Kenelty. And that program is part of the Master Gardener Volunteers as well. Then on Thursday, February 29th, from 1 to 2 p.m., there's the beginning of an Anger Management 12-week Spring Series program. So it begins February 29th and ends June 6th. It's a 12-week anger management course taught by a certified anger management specialist. And then coming up in March 3rd on a Sunday from 10:30 to 2:30 p.m., the CCE, we're having our annual Maple Fest, which is going to be right down the road from Wave Farm here at the Siusla Model Forest, 6055 New York 23. And you can, as they say, come experience the wonderful world of maple. And the CCE in Hudson, Wild Hudson Valley, will take participants on a journey through the history of maple sugaring and up to current methods. And there's, you know, sap sampling, and you can meet local people within the community who are involved in mapling in some capacity. And finally, I just want to also plug our EEL program, which is going to be coming in mid-March to early April, which a TBD date. It starts depending on eel migration, but it's a citizen science program where we study American eel populations within the Hudson River estuary. and we're always looking for new volunteers. We partner with the DEC for the Hannah Croy Creek site in New Baltimore, and you can contact us on our website to be added to the EEL program list. That's ccecolumbiagreen.org. But that's what we've got coming for the next month and a half.
Give me a date one more time, Will, on the maple syrup action.
That is Sunday, March 3rd, from 10:30 to 2:30 p.m.
Okay, and so it sounds like you folks are predicting that the sap will be flowing strongly at that point till that by then.
I believe so, yes.
Obviously, because you wouldn't want to have an event if the sap didn't flow yet. But it's amazing with climate change, like you never know what's going to happen. I came up with a new weather term. Like, you know how they're making up new weather events, like bomb cyclone?
Sure.
And oh, my favorite recent one that I just found out is Snownado.
Mm.
But I came up with one called bipolar vortex. And it's like when it's 10 degrees for a few days, and then it goes up to 50 for a few days, like right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we're witnessing is this, and with climate change, is this crazy extreme weather phenomena where it's just all over the map. And not to poke fun at all about mental illness, but like the bipolar vortex is just very real and telling. And how would that affect saps? Do we see sap being fairly regular in how it flows, when it flows? Because I know some years it's earlier, some years it's later. But when the maple sap comes with this extreme weather phenomena, are we going to see changes in when that might be? You know what I'm asking?
You know, in terms of the maple sap itself, I'm not the most knowledgeable person with syrup and like harvesting. But I mean, I do know that the sugar maple is one of those trees that is not going to be as competitive as the climate becomes more and more mild. It's going to have a little more trouble and likely will be pushed to more northern zones in the latitude.
Right, right. Well, I guess the whole point is to learn more about it, get to the maple sap, maple syrup event with Cornell Cooperative Extension. You can also go to your website, ccecolumbiagreen.org. I think, did I get it right?
That's right.
And find out everything that we're talking about here. Good stuff right there. And then the eel count, that's just so awesome. Anyone who's interested in nature, interested in creepy little slimy things like eels, well, you can get involved and actually, I think, even touch them or witness them. And, you know, this is a very important indicator of the health of our waterways and whatever is this eel counting, right? And
yeah.
What else do you do with the eels again? Can you tell me?
It's really just to get an understanding on their population levels, and eels were in a lot of ways extirpated from their normal population levels from the Hudson River with the pollution that has happened in the river, and the DEC has been working to promote eel populations within the river, and they will swim upstream a lot and spawn within the Hudson River estuary and go up tributaries. So we have people in different points along the Hudson River, and we help the CC Columbia Green help at the northernmost point at the New Baltimore Hannah Croy Creek site. But yeah, it's mainly to get a count on eel populations and just have an idea of how present they are within the Hudson River today.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, keep up the good work. Welcome to CCE. Welcome to the club. It's just been great having Devin Connolly and getting the updates on what you folks are doing over there on a monthly basis. And I always appreciate hearing and appreciate your work over there. And I hope you stick with it, and I hope it goes well.
All right. Thank you very much, Kieran. Great to meet you.
All right. Nice to meet you too. Will McCall of Cornell Cooperative Extension. You got the updates there, folks. You can go to ccecolumbiagreen.org and find out more. Valuable resource in our community for sure.